This is File 3, Cycle 2. Today's date is September 30th, 2015. This is Jean McMillan. I am interviewing Matthias Kiefer for his surveying business, his farm, his connections with Swassa, and all of the time that he grew up in town, family background, whatever he wants to talk about. But we're going to start with the genealogical information. What is your name?
Matthias Morgan Kiefer.
And when were you born?
1955.
Month?
March 22nd, second day of spring.
Very appropriate. Where were you born?
Sharon Hospital.
Your parents' names?
Mary Louise Quayle.
And that's with two L's and an E?
One L.
And an E.
And an E. And George Crony Kiefer, Jr.
How do you spell Crony?
Just like you think, C-R-O-N-E-Y.
Do you have siblings?
I have two siblings, a sister older, Catherine, and a brother younger, Thomas.
What's your educational background after high school?
I went to a two-year college to get a degree in forestry and land surveying.
And you've used it ever since?
Used it ever since. I had an idea that I wanted to become a forester, become a surveyor in high school.
Why?
Our nation's founding fathers.
That's wonderful. Let's talk about your farm first, and then we'll work through. You do have a farm.
I grew up with my dad, and we had a couple cows and a couple horses, and we made hay. Mm-hmm. And that was the start of it. And the farm also had other entities, being maple syrup and Christmas trees.
Oh, yes.
And then I married a girl, Allison. And we have a farm, a little bit larger farm. So I've been farming on Salakill Road and now on Salmon Kill Road.
The farm that you have on Salmon Kill, is it mixed with animals and farm?
It has, yeah. It's a large farm. And it's I'm proud to say that it was the first farm in the town of Salisbury to put under conservation easement. It was done by the previous owner.
And who was the previous owner?
Jeff and Doris Walker. So we have, a dozen sheep, five goats, a couple donkeys, some poultry.
You've got a mixed bag.
Yeah, going on vacation is always to arrange a lot.
With animals, yes.
Yeah.
Do you still do the Christmas tree farm here?
Still do the Christmas tree farm here. My dad and I started it. My dad started it. Came into it after getting out of college, and now I'm pretty much doing, he gets all the money, I do all the work.
Yeah, parents are like that.
Mm-hmm.
About how many trees do you sell a year?
Somewhere between 100 and 130. We do not advertise.
I know you don't have to.
Right. I don't want to get any bigger because it would take more time.
Oh, sure. Do you do the maple syrup here?
We have all the trees on Salakill Road, and I have the sap house where I do the boiling on Salmon Kill Road.
And approximately how many gallons of syrup?
Somewhere between 40 gallons and 70 gallons.
Do you grate it?
No.
It's just sap, syrup?
Syrup, just, because we bottle it in glass jars and some plastic jars.
Do you use, when you collect the sap, do you use plastic lines or do you use buckets?
We use buckets because I find it easier, and I invite people to help gather. It's actually a little bit of a social time.
Mm-hmm. It would be.
There's two or three regular people that help me, and it's a lot of fun.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Anything more you'd like to tell me about farming before we move on to surveying?
No, it's just I've always enjoyed it. I put up, it was in grade school that I started with Dad, and I always was doing a little bit, and I find it therapeutic. And I describe myself to other people that just that are new friends. They said I was educated as a forester, make my money as a land surveyor, but I spend all my money on the farm.
And if you're going to be a farmer, you really have to love doing it because it's so much work. Mm-hmm. And it's a 7/24.
Yeah, no, I just like the end of the day being able to do chores and do stuff.
Yep. Surveying. Training that you had to go through for surveying.
As a land surveyor, going to college, there are colleges that you can get a degree in surveying. You can get a 2-year degree. Mm-hmm. You can get a 4-year degree. So as I got a 2-year degree. My apprenticeship was was required. With a 2-year degree, your apprenticeship is 5 years, and that's under the direct supervision of a land surveyor.
And you worked for 3 or 4 different people.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing that happened with me was the college I went to lost its accreditation with the state of Connecticut for the 2 years I was there. So
they knew you were coming.
Yeah, my apprenticeship then, with no formal education, your apprenticeship is 9 years. So my apprenticeship was 9 years, and I worked for Frank Spencer first out of Sharon, and then I worked with Howard Stearns out of Cornwall, and then I worked with Rich Adams out of Kent, and then my final person I worked with was Peter Lamb out of Sharon, and I learned a lot from each one of them. Peter Lamb I became partners with.
What was the college?
The college I went to was Paul Smith College. It's in upstate New York.
For land surveying?
For land surveying and forestry.
Ah, okay. And you told me why you went into surveying, because of George Washington.
And Abraham Lincoln and Adams and Jefferson and Ben Franklin. There was a lot of great men in the early parts of the United States that were all surveyors.
Any reference to Samuel Moore, who wrote the first book on surveying, that lived in Salisbury?
That was not a...
That wasn't one of your prime...
Correct.
Okay. How long have you been a surveyor?
Got out of college in 75.
And you're still surveying?
Right.
What kind of survey work do you do?
Boundary survey, property boundary surveying, and topographic surveying for construction projects, whether it's residential, mainly residential projects.
Anything you want to add to your business?
It's a unique business. It's very hard to explain to someone what all the three facets of surveying.
And they are?
Land record research, field work, and office computations.
And I bet you like the field work better than the office work.
I like them equally.
Really?
I like them equally.
That's unusual.
You got to be able to, anybody that will, it takes a long time to train someone to be able to handle all aspects of it. Mm-hmm. And dealing with the landowner is paramount, to be able to get an understanding, get them to have an understanding what a survey is.
Do you have staff?
I have one full-time employee and 2 part-time employees. And I used to have 3 full-time employees and 1 part-time.
Has the business itself changed much over the years?
Yes, the equipment has. The equipment can replace a person.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, but it's also, the technology is terrific. It allows you to do things that was not possible 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The last year I was at, the year that I graduated from college, they still did not have computers. All computations were done longhand with logarithms.
Oh, yes.
And then it wasn't until the year or two later that actually there was a simple handheld calculator. Mm-hmm. So then we'd use natural sines and cosines. And then it wasn't until a few years after that we actually had desktop computers. So So it's in my career, it's been amazing because at the first, the way we used to measure distances for the first 10 or 12 years was with a 200-foot hand tape, and you had to have spring balances. Mm-hmm. You had to take temperature readings. You had plumb bobs.
Yeah.
And then soon after that, you had electronic distance measuring devices, which were just as accurate whether they were, it was 10 feet away or whether it was 1,000 feet away.
And it was much easier to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Tree warden. Now, your dad was tree warden for 23 years. Is he still tree warden, or are you taking...
No, he's not tree warden. I went to, with my forestry background, my dad and I were both licensed foresters with the state of Connecticut. Now, tree warden is different than a forester. Mm-hmm. It's urban forestry.
Explain the difference in simple terms, please.
Simple terms. A tree warden is more of an arborist.
Okay.
And urban forestry is dealing with tree health and not necessarily climbing and feeding trees. It's more of a forestscape issue and not individual tree issue. It's foresters deal with large acreages of trees usually, and not necessarily individual parks.
Like woodlot management?
Correct.
Okay.
And it could be foresters deal with timber management, recreation uses, and wildlife enhancement projects.
Oh, good. Where did you go for your training?
To become a tree warden, DEEP offered a 5, 6, 7 day course that spanned 7 weeks at the Connecticut Forest and Park Association headquarters in Rockfall, New York, Rockfall, Connecticut.
Where is Rockfall?
Not too far from Middletown.
All right, middle of the state.
Middlefield.
All righty. What are your duties as a tree warden?
Tree warden is town roadside trees, trying to figure out whether they are hazardous or not, whether they should be taken down to the benefit, removed, or trying to see what should be planted. To replace trees that are sick, storm damaged, diseased, and then dealing with the public on just town trees, town roadside trees.
Then you don't have any connection with cemeteries and the tree work that's necessary for the town-owned cemeteries?
Well, the town-owned cemeteries, yes.
As Taconic or Mount Riga or Dodgers?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, the selectmen would call me in on them because they're the lead person on any town tree. The selectmen have to figure out how much money to spend on it. I recommend what should be done.
Okay, because Chapinville has got a blasted locust tree that needs to come down.
Well, I have instructed the selectmen to go take care of it and get it down.
Good. Thank you. My little personal axe there. When did you become Salisbury's tree warden?
Last year.
Do you intend to stay with
For a while, I can stay there. The only thing that would happen differently would be if my family... business or farm needed more time.
Priorities.
Right.
Priorities. Were you ever in the summer youth program?
Yes. I was part of the first crew of that summer youth because my father was the person who managed that at the beginning.
And it's still going.
Yeah, no, there was... I remember a good 10 kids that are all my age, and this was either... I'm thinking I was in the late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah, it would be right, because it started in the 70s.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was in high school then.
Do you think it influenced you in any way?
Not really, because of you got to realize who my father was.
Yeah, that does make a difference.
I was, Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts were never something I tried them, but I was already doing so much at home.
Yeah, time factor. On the farm. Time factor. How about a skiing background? Did your parents have anything to do with skiing?
Oh, yeah. My mother was and dad were very active in skiing. They both were directors at the Salisbury Winter Sports Association. And my mother worked at Catamount Ski Area for 35 years. And I never ski jumped. Oh, I ski jumped maybe once or twice. I cross country ski raced, and I raced alpine skiing as well, all the way from grade school through high school and into college.
What is alpine skiing?
Downhill skiing.
Oh, all right.
Which is slalom, giant slalom, and downhill.
Okay. Then I imagine that your father got you involved in SWASA rather early.
Both my parents did. My mother was just as instrumental in the early day in the 60s as my father. Dad would help truck kids around to Nordic ski meets, Nordic being cross-country skiing and jumping, along with about three or four other parents. We traveled throughout New England every weekend.
Really?
Yes.
Ooh.
So we had a good, strong 30 kids that were traveling all the time. Meanwhile, my mother, she did something a little bit different. She gave lessons for downhill skiing right here on Selick Hill to ladies and men that mm-hmm. wanted to learn how to ski. Also, my mom, with a good family friend named Art Wilkinson, started the first ski swap in Mom's kitchen back in the 60s. And now the ski swap is continued. It's at the Lakeville Firehouse. Mm-hmm. But the first two or three years, it was in Wheezy Kiefer's kitchen. Wheezy and George Kiefer's kitchen here.
Good heavens.
There was so much mud.
Oh, yeah.
So much mud.
Oh, yeah.
So finally they said they had to get it out.
Out. Does SWASA have anything to do with the ski program that I think is still going on at Salisbury Central? That was introduced when I was teaching, so it would have been...
Well, there's two things at Salisbury Central that are continuing. Audrey Whitbeck and I helped her, with also Elise Harney, we started a cross-country skiing program at Salisbury Central mm-hmm. with the phys ed teacher.
That would have been Cliff Fales.
I think it was just when Janice, or end of Cliff Fales and the start of Janice.
Okay, that would be 91-ish because Cliff and I retired together in 91.
Well, I remember doing something with George Parsons.
Yep.
When I first got out of college, and I got out of college in 75, Salisbury Winter Sports bought a whole bunch of cross-country equipment,
mm-hmm.
and we offered cross-country skiing. George and I, George's family was a longtime member of Salisbury Winter Sports,
yep.
and we provided skis, boots, and poles, and we had 40 different sets, and we brought kids up at the end of the day to the top of Selick Hill, and we had cross-country skiing. We also did cross-country skiing down on some of the athletic fields at Salisbury Central. So this would be in the late 70s.
I don't remember that part of it.
I remember that quite well, because
yeah.
I was the cross-country skiing coach for Salisbury Winter Sports at that time. Because that was one of the things,
But that was after school. That wasn't part of the...
Correct.
That's why I wouldn't remember it.
Yeah, and then there was another thing that happened a little, and this could have been Gene, in the 90s, is when they had to rebuild the gymnasium at the grade school. And they had no, in the wintertime, they had no, I don't know where they played basketball, but they didn't play basketball because everything was torn apart. And that was the winter that they started to go to Catamusqueria. Was because they wanted to offer, was it Tuesdays?
Yes.
That they, a program to take kids to Catamount. And it was one bus or two buses.
Yeah.
And it just started then, and it's continued.
That may have started in the late 80s, because I do vaguely remember that, because my class was very encouraging that I get on skis. And there was no way I was going to do that.
That would be about right, because my son was born in 1987, and it had already happened. It had already been in position maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years.
And it was a wonderful program.
It's still going.
Oh, great.
And one of the things that I think should, I would like to say is there is a great, a very long, great association with the town of Salisbury with Catamusqueria. Jack Fisher, a native son, started two skierias after World War II. One being Catamount, mm-hmm. and the other one being Jiminy Peak.
Yeah.
And Jack Fisher, his grandmother was a Scoville.
Mm-hmm.
And he, and when I was a kid in the 60s, and my mom would be going to Catamount every weekend as a ski instructor, we had a Volkswagen bus or we had some station wagon. It was packed with kids, not just me, not my brother, just my brother, or not my sister. There was people going up. And the Catamount ski area, a lot of the people that work there were friends of Jack Fisher's from the town of Salisbury.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that 50% or more of the people working at Catamount were people that knew my mom and dad. And so when I was skiing around, there were people that knew who I was as Wheezy's kid.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And there were so many families. The Smith family, the Maury family, the Brazy family. They are so many people skiing. John Clark was there.
Mm-hmm.
There was just it was a really friendly atmosphere.
I think Robin Leach worked there for a while.
He still does.
He still does. Because I did an oral with him, and I didn't do Jack Fisher, but I have one on Jack Fisher, and he talks about starting Jiminy Peak and Catamount.
Right.
Works out fine.
Yeah, I remember the guy that was working the rope toe was Jesse Maury, and Jesse Maury was older than my dad, you know, maybe 20 years. And in the summertime, Jesse Maury worked for my dad in the forestry business.
Oh, my word.
So I got to see him
a lot
on the rope toe.
Yep.
And then at you know, in the early 60s.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
But it's just Salisbury Winter Sport. And Jack Fisher was on the first board of directors of Salisbury Winter Sports Association.
Really?
Yes.
When it started, did it always have a board of directors?
Yes. The first thing, before World War II, it was the Salisbury Outing Club. That was in the late 20s in through the 30s. And then the war, everything sort of faded away. And then right after the war, the association was created, called Salisbury Winter Sports Association. And there were a group of characters that really continued what the Satries and others had started before the war.
And it's still going on.
It's surprisingly, it shows the character of our town.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Something that started back in the 20s, and it's still going on.
All volunteer.
Oh, yes. How many are on the board?
20 at the moment.
And I think I asked you about how many volunteers, and you said it was... you couldn't come up with a real number.
Well, I remember there's some, every season you go through, you have different groups that do different things. Mm-hmm. And are different individuals that do different things. I mean, we have so many projects. But for a ski jump, to put it on, we are thinking that we are 80 to 100 for a ski jump weekend.
I know I've interviewed somebody like Joe Cleveland that shows up and he does one thing. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, and that's fine.
You're right.
That's fine. And this has changed over the years. I can remember when they used to bring in snow.
Correct.
And now you make snow.
Correct.
And this winter you had to get rid of some snow.
Correct. This past winter was a big bonus, and we had to actually try to get some off the landing hill to make it, because it was just too deep and it was not safe. So, yeah, we used to, as you said, we used to truck snow in. Where did we get the snow? Well, we sometimes used to get it from snowdrifts. That's what we had. And we all know the climate has totally changed in the last 20 years. For a while there, we were getting it off of hockey rinks. It's the shavings that came in. The local prep schools have been very generous. We actually went to Simsbury, where there were four rinks where they have, it's for figure skating.
Yes.
And there's a big training center there. Mm-hmm. And we actually, one year, we hauled from there. That was before our snowmaking has come to. And right now, our snowmaking is not even as good as any ski area, but it's
sufficient.
It's sufficient to do, because you've got to realize that we have junior jumping that goes for two and a half months, and that's on the small hills. But we have the big hill, which we try to put snow on for at least 2 weeks a year, so there could be some training in our big competition. This year we have the junior nationals coming back to Salisbury.
Ooh.
Which we had the junior nationals, which were 5 years ago, were called the junior Olympics. Now they're called the junior nationals.
How many hills are there?
There are three hills.
And what's each hill?
There's a 20 meter hill, there's a 35 meter hill, and then there's a 70 meter hill.
And what happens on each hill?
We start small and go big. So if you're learning, you learn on the 20, and that's where I jumped a little bit on the 20. And then as you get more confident, you get to the 35 or whatever. That's the 30 or 35, and then after that you get to the 70. And the 70 is a mid-size jump on the big scheme of everything. For nationals or internationals. Olympic competitions are on the 90s and the 120s.
Oh, all right.
So that's the most serious competition. There are hills that are bigger than that. Mm-hmm. It's called ski flying. And there are only a handful of those in the world. But here in New England, there is only one 70-meter hill in New England.
And that's us.
That's us, and that is an important thing to realize, is that if you're learning to ski jump, you can't go from a 40-meter to a 90-meter very comfortably.
No. You have to have that intermediate.
You have to have that intermediate size. So we have that intermediate size, which is huge for young people.
I am amazed that there isn't a 70-meter hill in Maine, Vermont, or New Hampshire.
There's talk about doing one in Lake Placid.
But that's New York. That's
right,
not New England.
Well, there are 75-meter hills in Brattleboro, Vermont.
Okay.
But they don't have a lot of small ones.
Yeah.
So they don't have a complete program. They have a terrific program in Lebanon, New Hampshire. Very nice program.
Okay.
Where they have a 10 and like a, or a 15 and a 30 and a 45, and it's funded by the town, and they even have a little downhill ski area.
Okay.
And it's a beautiful little program like we have, a little hills facility, but they've got funding that comes from a trust that was put up to assist that program, but it's all youth orientated.
What's the age of the participants for our
the participant they roughly speaking 8 or 9 is the start, and we have some adults jumping.
Okay.
Not on the big hill of the adults, but right now we have a couple kids that are five kids that are jumping on the 35-meter hill, and I would think that this year, coming up, they will be jumping, if we can get it going, on the 65-meter hill.
Ooh. Funding. Now, how is the SWASA funded?
Through donations. We raise money through different events that we host. Otherwise, it's all... There's no municipal money, no town money.
It's all private.
We can... we have expenses and insurances to pay for. We have a year and a half, and we'll have the new tower all paid off.
Really?
That was $750,000 that we had raised over the last six years.
That's a major undertaking.
The town was very nice to give us some credit support. That if we, but that was only to the tune of $140,000. Mm-hmm. We never had to ask for that.
Good, good.
But we've learned how to control our expenses, mm-hmm, and make some money, mm-hmm, on different events other than the ski jump on the weekend.
What are some of the fundraising events that you hold?
In the past, we used to do a mountain bike race, mm-hmm, at Lime Rock Racetrack, mm-hmm, and they were it was not on the track; it was up in the woods,
yeah,
on trails that John Higgins had made when he had a cross country ski center at the Lime Rock Park back in the 60s and 70s, and then. The other things that we've been doing, that sort of faded away because that was so labor intensive. Now we have there's a golf tournament. Mm-hmm. There's a ski swap, which has been going on since the 60s.
Since the kitchens.
Since Wheezy's kitchen, and then we have another little event which. There's a beer tasting event, which is coming up here in October. And so that's been good. We've had a couple dances that we've tried to see what we can do.
Is that the snowball? Or?
Yeah, then there was something that was called the beach ball or the sun ball in the summertime.
Oh, yeah.
And there, it's important to get our name out, and it's very... And it helps just to get out. And
oh, sure.
So those are the main things that we have done recently. I remember when my dad was Kiefer kids were born, they actually tried to do a summer jump on crushed ice.
Reggie Lamson was telling me about that one.
Right. And you can go on YouTube and say summer ski jump in Salisbury, and there's this little 2-minute video movie of that.
Really? At least I pay attention when I do the oral histories, by golly. Let's move on to civic things, and you've done many, many civic activities.
My mom and dad have always been active when we were growing up in town, issues and projects and commissions, mm-hmm, and boards. Mm-hmm. When I got out of college, I wanted to help. Probably one of the first things I got on was Salisbury Winter Sports Association, and then probably right after that was Salisbury Conservation Commission. And then after that was Salisbury Zoning Board of Appeals. And after that, Salisbury Park and Forest Commission. And after that, Salisbury Planning and Zoning Commission. And after that, Salisbury Recreation Commission. And after that, Salisbury Board of Finance. Right now, I'm currently on the Board of Finance, currently on the Sewer Commission, currently on the Ag Ed Advisory Committee at the Housatonic High School, and was still on the board of Salisbury Cemetery Association, no longer the superintendent.
Lucky you.
That was a 30-year run.
Really?
Yeah. And just, but anyway, and then what else am I on right now? Salisbury Ambulance Board.
I was waiting for that one. Okay.
So it's, I like to help, and I don't see me as the lead person on anything at the moment. I'm there for support.
You're an Indian rather than a chief right now.
I was president of Salisbury Winter Sports for 15 years. Currently I'm the lead person on the Park and Forest Commission, but that commission is it's a minor thing compared to the ambulance or the Board of Finance.
They're not minor, but in a different level.
Correct.
Because they're all important. I just finished doing Rod Lankler on the various boards, and he's been on 15 boards in the 23 years he's been in town.
Yes.
And it's people like you, but I think you're special because you always grew up here. I mean, this is your town.
Well, one of the great things that I just most recently, when my sons went to Salisbury Central School, I was worried that there would be nobody local at Salisbury Central School when he started. Anybody that I would know.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that I was really happy to see, let's say a third or more of the kids that were in Westy's class, my sister, my brother, or I went to school with.
Oh, good.
Their parents.
Oh, good.
Or their aunts or uncles. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of refreshing that, yes, it's changed, but it hasn't changed that much.
Because when I was teaching, and that was from 67 to 91, almost everybody lived in town. Mm-hmm. And as the years progressed, the teachers commuted from further and further away, and there weren't as many local mm-hmm. teachers. The advantage of being a local teacher, I think, is you see the kids in a different light when they're out of school. Mm-hmm. And for me now, I'm interviewing some of my kids. Mm-hmm. Yesterday I was interviewing Tom Payne. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen him since he was in my class. Mm-hmm. He's now 40. Mm-hmm. He's fire department, was on ambulance, town crew. But we still have a relationship. Mm-hmm. And that makes it special because you're not a commuter. Mm-hmm. You live
right.
In town. You have given me a wonderful interview. Is there anything that you'd like to add that I haven't asked about?
No, you've asked for quite, yeah, yes. We've covered a lot of bases.
We have, but you had a lot of things to say, too.
Yeah, no, I really feel lucky to live in this community. I enjoy the diverse characters in town.
Oh, yes.
And it continues to be a lot of fun. It's important for someone to, I feel it's important, that someone who grew up around here, who has deep connections with it, to get involved and stay involved in the town in some capacity. Mm-hmm. and we all can learn from the older generation.
Yes.
And I have conversations with my generation saying that we are the generation now to set an example for people that are younger than us.
Wonderful.
Because we have to encourage them to be part of the community. You know, our town is we have a lot of people that own houses in town that it's not their full-time residence. Mm-hmm. And we're going to come upon some big changes in the rest of my life in which the special services of the fire department and the ambulance, there may have to be paid individuals to take over those because the numbers are dwindling.
I know.
And or, should I say, the age of the volunteer is getting older. Mm-hmm. So that's a big...
It's a big concern.
Big concern. And one of the other big concerns I have is that our local grocery store stays here and does not get... That can... Because to me, that's another vital thing that is to our town, is to have a local grocery store. You can get a gallon of milk in town and some eggs.
But just don't live in Lakeville. We used to have four.
I know.
We have a convenience store that's part of a gas station. But if I want to get a loaf of bread, I either have to go to Sharon or Millerton or come into Salisbury.
Right. But so. I still think that's something that is important for the community to be able to have. I remember Sally Javal saying, you can't even buy a spool of thread in town anymore.
No.
And this is what? How long ago was that? Was that 30 years ago?
Yep.
20 years ago?
Yep.
Things have changed.
Yes, but the core of the town and the ambience of the town, I think, is still there.
Yeah, that's where I would... Wouldn't it be great to have someone who only comes up here on weekends volunteer for the ambulance and be an EMT?
That's a good thought. That's
or a,
good
a fireman.
Thought. Mm-hmm.
Who would be willing to take time to help in that manner.
I think the problem may be the amount of training that they have to go through.
Yeah.
It's, to my eyes, it's incredible.
Yep. Well, I often thought about becoming a EMT or fireman. And I would have to get the training.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a training. It takes so much time to become certified.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I haven't figured out how to find that time.
Well, put in for 28-hour day. Thank you, Matt, so very much.
Okay. Great, Jean.